Today on Rare Mind Talks, we're joined by Kashyap, a mother, advocate, and school founder on a mission to rethink education for rare diseases and inclusion across Europe. Before we get into systems and models, Kashyap, thank you very much for being here today. I'd love to start with your personal story. So you're just not an educator, you're also a mother and a patient advocate. How have these roles really shaped your vision for inclusive education?
Good day. Thank you for the invitation. That is true. I am not just an educator. I am also a patient advocate, but most of all, I am a mother. And I think that this last role had the biggest impact on what I think about inclusive education and education in general. My son Mikołaj went to the kindergarten when he was three years old. And then at the age of nine, he started his education in a primary school. And when he was about 11 or 12, so after quite a few years, I decided that this was not the kind of education or the kind of school that I wanted for my son or for us as for his parents. So I did not want the school and the education that was focused mostly on Mikołaj's dysfunctions and his deficits, the school that did not see his resources. The school was also focused on fixing Mikołaj, repairing him, instead of empowering him and showing him that he can do things in a different, his individual, individual way. As a parent, I also was not seen by this school. The school did not talk to me. They informed me about different things, but they didn't want to talk to me. They had never asked me about my goals, my dreams, my plans for future. So I decided that this was not an education that I wanted and that I was dreaming of for my children and for my son. And this was the moment when I decided to open my own school, a school dedicated for children with special educational needs, but the school that will meet my son's and my needs as a mother. So I think that this was, being a mother was the most important thing that influenced the way I look at education and at inclusive education.
Since the first time we've met and talking about the schools, I really always admired the model that you've put in place, because the challenge that you described is actually a challenge that parents like ourselves have when they see their children go into the normal, what we call normal schooling system. So watching these options for empowering them, it's really important. And here, my personal opinion is that you did not just build a school, you actually start making a different philosophy of education with the school. So talking a little bit more about the model that you just described, Kashyap, your model focused on the student as a person, not on the diagnosis or challenges. What does that change in practice?
Yes, so it was not just the building. Our school is not just a building, but it's a model. But the model that we have been working on for a few years now, because when I started it, I knew what kind of education I didn't want, but I was not quite sure what I wanted instead. So I started looking for inspiration. And the main, there were a few, but the main one came from the Canadian organization CanChild, and with their approach and model called F-Words for Child Development, which is extremely person-centered. So our school is student-centered. It's not disability-centered. It does not mean that we ignore the medical diagnosis because it is important. It may have an impact on students' behavior, on the way that the student learns things. It may also have impact. It may also have impact on his or her needs. Every school employee, a teacher or a student assistant, is obliged to know and understand the student's medical diagnosis. But we have also observed that even though we have two students with the same diagnosis, it does not mean that they have the same needs. So the most important thing is to learn who the student is and what is important for him. So we use F words for child development to talk to kids and teenagers in our school, and to ask them questions about their friends, their family, things that they want to learn or things that they already are good at, their interests, their dreams, their plans for future. And we use this information to prepare students' portraits, students' profiles. And this is something that we do before we ask about diagnosis and disability. A very important thing is also functional assessment, which is also more important in our school than the medical diagnosis, because it really shows us what are the students' resources. So what we can build his or her development on, but it also shows us what are the student's needs. So what are the areas that he needs support in? So this is what we start with. It does not mean that we forget about disability. We remember about that. But the first thing we ask for is, who are you? What are your needs? What do you want to learn? What are your plans? What are your goals? So we focus on the person, his, her goals, his and her needs.
And I just love that. And I also love the way you mentioned the F words, because in other contexts it might be sounding something different. In this context, it's just spectacular. And these are functioning, fitness, fun, family, friends, and future. So, Kasia, can you talk a little bit more about those? And maybe which one, in your opinion, is the most underestimated one out of these?
Yes, I always add F words for child development to make sure that people really know what I mean. And these are the words that you have just mentioned. I think there are two words that are really important and sometimes underestimated, and the other one is quite difficult. Underestimated, I think this is the word fun. Because I think that we often forget how important fun is in everybody's life, but especially in a child's life. So when you meet people working with or supporting children with disabilities, they are usually quite serious because disability is a serious topic. There's nothing funny about it. And we tend to forget that joy, happiness, fun should be a part of every child's life, also the child with disability. So often when I meet parents, I ask them, how do you play with your child? What do you do together just for fun? And honestly, parents rarely do anything for fun with children with disabilities because they usually drive them to different therapies and different therapists. We also forget how powerful fun is in child's development, playing with parents, playing with peers, but playing just on your own has a huge impact on the way you develop because it lets you experience the world. It also motivates you. So I think we really should remember, and we try to remember in our school, that education and therapy must be fun. But a difficult word is future. This is difficult, especially for parents, and especially parents of children with complex, severe disability, because these parents are worried what will happen to their children when they are not able to take care of them anymore. So this is a very difficult topic to discuss. It's much easier to discuss with the kids. They always know what they want to do in the future, but it's much more difficult with the parents. And I remember once working on a profile of one of our students, Marcin. Marcin is a person with severe intellectual disability, but he is physically really fit. And I remember talking to his mother for the first time. I talked to the mother because at that time, Marcin did not have any AAC tools, augmentative and alternative communication tools. So I talked to his mother. And first, she told me that she had nothing to say because Marcin has no resources, no skills. There is no much to talk about. But I started asking her really simple questions, step by step. And we talked for 2 hours about Marcin, about the things that he is interested in, the things that he can do, the things that he enjoys. And then I asked her about the future. And she told me that her dream was that she thought that he was an extremely handsome guy, and she wanted him to be a photo model. And I thought, well, I think. Personally, I think it is possible. And a few months later, as Marcin's mother is an artist and she designs different things, including clothes, on her Facebook profile, I saw Marcin's pictures advertising and promoting the hoodies that she had designed. I mean, this conversation inspired her to think about his future, but not only think about it. But make it come true, and it was really powerful for me. And I often share this story because I really think that F words conversations, not profiles as well, but F words conversations really have a huge impact on kids and on their parents as well.
Oh, that story is really inspiring, and it's one that a lot of parents should actually have, including I'm as guilty as anyone else, including myself, to start thinking about the future, because if they are empowered, they can have a really bright future, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And fun should be part of it. I mean, fun should be part of everyone's life, and kids, and definitely on kids' life. So you've also mentioned that these fun and other heavy weights on day-to-day activities are driven by going to different therapies, the busyness of the day-to-day, which then also requires a different type of organization and a different type of mindset in a way. So your school integrates the parents' conversations, as you've mentioned, but also then therapists, psychologists, doctors into everything that you've just described. How does this multidisciplinary model work in practice?
In fact, it is not a multidisciplinary model. It is a
Okay.
transdisciplinary model.
Oh, okay.
And what is the difference? So, because I, as a parent, I have experienced this multidisciplinary model, which meant that my son was supported by different professionals. But these people usually did not know each other. They never talked to each other. They did not share their goals. They were individually working to support my son. And I, as a mother, had to coordinate their work, and I did not like it. It was too much responsibility, and it was really difficult. So, in our school, we work in a transdisciplinary model, which means that our teams consist of professionals and non-professionals. So, it's not just a teacher, a PT, or psychologist, but parents are the members of the team. And the child, him or herself, is also the member of the team because our model is student-centered. So this is important for us to find out what are the things that our student, the kid we work with, wants to learn. So we share the goals with the student, but we also share the goals with the parents. So the team works together. We do not work separately and individually, which means that we meet at least twice a year and we discuss our conclusions from the functional assessment. We also discuss the kid's functioning at school, but also in his natural environment, at home and in the place where the child lives. We discuss what will be our goals for the next 6 months and who is responsible for what to achieve these goals. And it is not just the professionals that take the responsibility. It is shared responsibility. The goals are shared, so the responsibility is shared as well. So we do everything together. There are also some other people sometimes who support us. These are, for example, brothers, sisters, grandparents. Sometimes these are neighbors or mother's colleague from work. So there are different people that are sometimes involved. Also, when it is needed, we ask other people for support. Like, for example, when it is a child with a rare disease, we get in touch with geneticist and ask him for support. If this is a very rare syndrome and we know we don't have enough knowledge about it, we ask the geneticist to support us, to give us information and explain what the syndrome is about, what we can expect, how we can support the child and the family. So yes, this is the way we work.
And Kasia, is that how you align such a diverse team? Because parents, health professionals, educators, all these need to be aligned. Is it by sharing a common goal focused on the child that you bring everyone together?
Yes. So, for example, of course, physicians have their goals, but when we sit together and we, for example, decide together that right now the most important thing is developing the child's communication. So we say, okay, we'll all work on it now. So an AAC specialist will prepare an individual communication system for the child. But then we say, okay, you parents have to use it at home. You physicians, when you talk to a child, you have to use this individual system. You educators, when you work with the child, or physiotherapists, or we all need to use it. We all need to speak the same language. Sometimes there are some medical issues. Okay, so there are some problems that the child is facing at the moment. So we say, okay, we will stop other activities at the moment because the most important thing now is to concentrate on the child's medical issues. So we will keep at school, we'll keep watching, observing the child, informing the parents, informing the physicians, what is going on, what we observe, is the child getting better, or yes, or is something really going on? So we try to work out together. Usually we have like two, three goals for 6 months, not too many. And we all work on these two or three goals.
That's so important to connect all these dots. And as you said, typically that is on the parents' task list to do. So you are doing that on behalf of parents, but together with parents and professional healthcare educators, etc. That's just brilliant. And with so much student centricity, you had to cap the school limit on the number of students that you have. How do you see this scaling of this model versus the quality that you need to provide? Is this a system that can be replicated or not?
Yes. So the first thing, yes, we have a like limited number of students that we can accept in our school, and we do not want to have more than 100, which is already quite a big number. So we have several groups, and in each group there are between 4 to 6 students. In each group there is one educator and two student assistants. Sometimes there is more than two, but no more than three. So two, three student assistants. As our children, these are kids with usually we don't have kids with mild disability. These are usually kids with modest and severe complex disability, a lot of them with Rett syndromes. So they really need a very individualized education. And to be able to do it, to be able to focus on each child individually, we really need to have small groups and a small number of students. It is sometimes difficult because it means that when parents want their child to come to our school, which sometimes have to refuse and say no, we have no more place, we can't accept another student, and it is difficult for us. But we know that it is good for the students that we already have and for the parents that we already support. Is this model replicable? I think it is because we organize a lot of trainings and we are asked for trainings for by other schools teams and principals. But it is hard work. It is not easy. What usually happens is that people like adopt some parts of the model, but not a whole model because it really needs a lot of work. But there are two or three schools in Poland mostly that we have managed to network and we are trying to implement the model in their schools. But on the other hand, they also have some interesting solutions and some interesting models that we have learned from them. So it is something like, a win-win situation. Yeah, we offer something, but at the same time, we get something. And it usually works with the schools that are innovative, that are open to change. So these are usually schools that have already introduced some innovative solutions and are open for more. And then we can implement this model there, but we also can learn something from them.
It needs to be innovative to have this mindset shift. And you mentioned other schools, but your work also touch and includes other groups outside of the school. So I'm thinking, for example, on the community around the school and around these children as well. So how does true inclusion looks like from your perspective? And can you also share some examples of how you integrate the community into this model?
Yes, so our school is dedicated to children with special educational needs. So some people say that it's not an inclusive education. And I always argue that it is not true because I think that Polish regular schools are not really prepared to work with and to support our children because they really have complex needs. But it does not mean that our students cannot be included in the local community life. And I remember a few years ago, our city mayor, she decided to make this colorful road crossing in front of each school. But of course, she forgot about ours. So I sent her an email that, hello, we are a school here and we also want these colorful, signs on the street in front of our school. And they did it. I think that we are seen in the local community because we try to be as active as possible. We go shopping with our students to local shops, local markets. We go to cinema, we go to theater, we go to the library. We take part in every event that is organized in our local community, but we also organize cultural sport events, and we invite community members to take part to take part in these events. One of them is, for example, Cycling May, or I don't know if this is a proper word in English, but in May, all students in our city are invited to cycle to school, and they get some points for that. And then at the end of the month, they get prizes. And of course, our students do not cycle to school, but some of them are able to cycle. So we declared that our students will cycle in the school playground, and they will just cycle around the playground, but we also want them to be a part of the event and get the prizes. And for the last few years, we did it, and our students got the prizes, so we are very proud of them. We also, because there is Youth City Council in Gdańsk, and they kept forgetting about us, but we said, hello, we are also youth. We also live in this city, and we also have to have some impact on what is going on in the city. So I remember the first time we were invited to take part in the elections, and it was a disaster because they organized it in a building that was not accessible, and it was organized on the first floor, and there was no lift. So when we arrived, they just had to take everything down on the ground floor to let us take part in the election. So now every year we vote. Unfortunately, we still haven't had a representative in this youth city council, but I hope one day we'll be able to prepare someone and represent our school and this group of students in front of the city council.
That's just amazing, and all this impact. So you bring education to meet the social system, and all this impact done with some really positive examples rather than just the negative shouting that sometimes we see around. So you actually show up by showing that it is possible. And by the way, congratulations on the prizes for cycling. It must
Thank
be a
you.
great achievement for students.
Thank you. Yes, we try not to, judge people, but sometimes we provoke because when there is, for example, our city mayor's invitation to the students, to all students in Gdańsk, an invitation to an event, we always go there. And sometimes the event is not prepared and is not accessible for all the students, and we say, hello, we are also the students in Gdańsk. You sent an invitation, we felt invited. So here we are. And step by step, I have the impression that they learn. They really have to remember about each student. When you invite each student, it means each student, also the one with severe disability.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kasia, let me pick up on the future that we were discussing about earlier. And this is an important part, as you mentioned, not only for the child's life, but also for the parents. And it's a very scary thought process for parents, but it's also very important to think about very earlier on. And you've mentioned that when you receive a student, you have this assessment time, but when the student is about to leave the school, there is also a long period or a period where you assess them leaving so they can build a better future for themselves. Why is this so critical? And can you talk a little bit more about that process?
Yes, transition is a very difficult moment for an individual and for his or her parents. In Poland, you may start education at the age between 7 or 9, depending on a kind and level of disability, and finish at the age of 21, 24, which means that a person spends quite a lot of time in the educational setting. And people, I mean, children, young adults, their parents, they really feel safe and comfortable in this setting and are extremely stressed when they have to leave it and go to something unknown, especially that the Polish system does not have a lot to offer to adults with disabilities, especially the ones with complex, severe disability. So when I was working on ERN Ithaca transition guideline, transition from pediatric healthcare system to adult healthcare system, then I thought that It might also be a good idea to think of some kind of procedure to introduce in our school that will support individuals and their parents to go through this stressful and difficult moment when a person is being transferred from school to adult services. This procedure in our school starts 2 years before a person leaves the school. Usually there is a group of students, so we organize like a group meeting for parents and students to discuss the services that are available in our local community and dedicated to adults. Then we have individual meetings with the person and their parents. And for example, I remember Olaf, who left our school like last year. And I remember that first his parents and Olaf, they decided to transfer to daytime activity center, and they decided to visit the ones that we suggested. But meantime, we had this functional assessment, and even though we had known Olaf for quite a long time, we realized that he has some resources that we were not aware of, and maybe an occupational therapy workshop would be a better place for him because we could see that there is a chance for him to go to work. So we suggested parents that maybe they will try this path. They were not really convinced at the beginning, but they decided to visit the workshop and talk to the manager. And Olaf was offered a 2 week trial stay in the workshop, and he really enjoyed it very much. The professionals working there were very supportive. Olaf decided to change his mind. So his parents just had to, follow his decision and support him. And since then, we started working on empowering him in developing the skills that he would need in this new place. He also needed, but mostly his parents needed, some psychological support. So there was the school psychologist supporting them. And now Olaf has been in the workshop for over a year. In the first 6 months, we were in touch with him. So we visited him. He always said hello, talked to us. And now when I go there, for example, he pretends he doesn't know me. So I think that he feels really great there. He feels he's an adult. He left the school behind. This is his past. Now he's in a new system, a new reality, and he's really happy about it. I see, because Olaf is not the first student that we have used this procedure for, that it really works and it really helps. But the sad thing about it is that sometimes there is nowhere we can transfer our students to, and some of them stay at homes with their parents, and this is very frustrating because we as a school, we prepare our students for future good quality life, and staying at home is not what we want for our students. So sometimes it is really frustrating, but fortunately, in most cases, it works.
And that transition period is a big challenge that we have across Europe, across the world, and the options available are so little that it's always very exciting to hear the cases like Olaf, which brings again the F words, fun, future, like something that he's enjoying, and actually this student or child-centric view, because even though he's been with you for so long, there's still something new to learn about him that can help driving that
That is
path.
always very surprising how, when we introduced F words into our educational model, we realized how little we knew about our students. And we had known some of them for years, but we were so focused on their disability that we did not know who they really were. So we also learned a lot of new things about our students when we introduced F words. And now F words are something that we start with because we think this is the most important thing. You have to know who this person is.
That's just great, Kasia. It's been a really loving conversation. We are coming to an end, but I would like to ask you one last question. Is after all that you have shared today, what gives you hope right now?
It may not be very popular what I will say, but maybe not. I do not believe in politicians, I'm sorry. So I don't have much hope in politicians and in the system. I always believe in individual people. Individual people who have a passion, who are dedicated to the things that they do. I always see that change, innovation comes from individual person, not from the system. Hopefully we'll be able to put this in, to make these innovations a system, but it never goes the other way around. I mean, this is my experience. Yes. So I know. And sometimes I'm even surprised that there are so many people who are really dedicated to working with children, to doing work for children. And these are parents, these are professionals, lots of different people. So this gives me hopes that these people, I also work a lot with young people. Most of my school employees are young people, young teachers. And I see how they work, how they want to support children and their families. So I really believe in them. I believe in my team. I have hope in my team, in people that I know, that I meet locally, nationally, internationally. I believe in people in general, and they give me hope, yeah.
That's super. Thank you very much for sharing your story and your school's story. I think you just remind us all that a meaningful change, as you were mentioning, in education, but also in other ways of life, begins with courage, persistence, and what you also showed is this refusal for accept the status quo. And these individuals have that power. Rethinking inclusion for rare diseases is just about policy. That's another key learning I'm taking from this conversation. It's also about people, empathy, and building these systems that truly see every child as a child. So thank you very much, Kasia. And I would like also to thank you all for listening to these episodes of Rare Mind Talks. If this conversation resonated with you, share it with someone who cares about the future of inclusive education and get in touch. Thank you very much, everyone, and see you next time.
Thank you.